We're joined by the senior writer of MLB.com, and that is Barry Bloom. Barry, how are you this morning?
Hey, Marty. How you doing?
Very good. And you heard the little story that I told Bruce Jenkins about Barry Bonds. And, of course, you've had a lot of contact with Bonds in a written form and just knowing him over the years. How'd you like that one?
Well, you know, a couple of things here on that segment. You're a math. You're a lawyer, not a mathematician.
Okay.
If you're six games up and six games down, that's a 12-game spread, not a six-game spread.
Well, if you're six games over 500,
and you're six games
under 500,
then it's a 12-game spread.
But
if you were
only six back,
no, because you would be. It would depend on how many wins and losses it would be. If you were 500, you would be what, three games back?
That's correct.
Okay. All right.
See, you're stepping out of your field here.
Yeah, I am.
All right.
And then on the Bonds thing,
yeah.
The only thing I'll say to you about it is two things. FL pitched to Goldschmidt here last year, if you remember, and he hit a home run. He did the same thing. And number two, Bochy never walked Bonds. That's why he has had the most home runs in history against the Padres.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Bochy has always felt, and he used to say at the time, because people asked him, why don't you walk Barry? And he said, because how are we going to win a pennant or a World Series if we can't get out Barry Bonds in a crucial situation?
Hmm.
So this is Bochy's ethos anyway.
Okay.
He would rather let the pitcher pitch to the guy and work his way out than put another base runner on base.
All right, very good. That's a good topic for Bochy. Very good. Barry Bloom giving us a little insight into Bruce Bochy. You've had an interesting few weeks here. And as I say, you do a lot of traveling in baseball. But yesterday took you to San Diego for the funeral of Tony Gwynn. I know there's Bob Nightingale tweeted about it today. And the list of people who were there and just the emotion of it. And you were there. You knew Tony Gwynn so well. I think it would be great for you just to relay that some of that feeling to the audience this morning.
Well, Barry was there. And, you know, so was Cal Ripken. I thought that was very sweet of Cal because... Look, Cal didn't have much of a relationship with Tony except for when they played each other in All-Star games, and obviously they shared the pulpit or whatever you want to call it in Cooperstown in 2007 where both of them were inducted.
Okay.
So, and that was the tie-in. But for Cal to come all the way, I thought really showed something. Plus you had Hall of Famers, you had Rod Carew there, you had Winfield, you had Ozzie Smith. You know, obviously, guys who had Padre ties and knew Tony well. A lot of old teammates. You know, John Kruk came and Trevor Hoffman, both very tearful little eulogies, you know, during the course of the hour. You know, from all Templeton, Steve Finley. I mean, guys from all parts of his career were there. Adrian Gonzalez, who never played with Tony. The Dodgers, obviously, in town. But Adrian grew up in San Diego. He was a big Tony fan, and he was there.
You know, I talked to John Miller about this yesterday. And first, I want to ask you, who else spoke at the funeral?
Aside from, you know, John Boggs, Tony's longtime agent and business manager for 30 years, he said a few words. The president of San Diego State, you have to get the setting,
yeah.
Which I wrote about in the column I wrote on this yesterday.
Oh, did you write? Okay.
Yeah, Tony's life was bookmarked by San Diego State. You know, he was a star basketball player and baseball player there. Then he was drafted by both the Padres and Clippers on the same day. He chose wisely, I think, to play baseball. He had a 20-year career with the Padres and, as we know, won 8 National League batting titles, 3,141 hits, batting 338. And then he went back to his alma mater when the coach he played for retired, and Tony was his assistant for 1 year, and then for the last 12 years was the head coach at San Diego State. So you're talking about... maybe one of the most beloved people in a community in history. We were talking about this, and I was talking on the way out yesterday with Josh Burns, the Padres general manager, and he said he thought Tony was among the top five of the type of athlete to have an impact on his community, and I think he's actually the first. Because every other community, Look, San Francisco has had Montana. It's had Steve Young. It's had Willie. It's had Barry. I mean, you can go down the list. New York, Yankees, there's a plethora of great players. But for San Diego, there's nobody else. I mean, Tony, it started...
Ivan Murrell, no?
Yeah. Tony started in San Diego.
Nate Colbert?
No. Okay. You know, he's a lifelong Padre. He started at San Diego State, ended at San Diego State. There's even Junior Seau, who was beloved there and died a few years ago. He didn't play. He wasn't from there and didn't start and finish his career there. Trevor Hoffman didn't start his career there, didn't finish his career there, as beloved as he is. So, I mean, I just think Tony's sure. the guy, and he will now take on mythic proportions in his death.
Boy, very nice. Barry Bloom with us. One last thing. I was talking to John yesterday, and, of course, everyone talks about this, what you talk about, the character, the man, and the patient, and just the greatest guy in the world. He was one of the greatest hitters in Major League history.
Oh, there's no question.
And we sort of, you know, kind of don't want to look at that. We want to talk about him as a person, but... You know, when you look at this game that we love and watch every day, he's one of the greatest hitters we've ever seen.
Well, here's the funny thing about that. He knew everything. You know, he was never, really big ego about this stuff. And but he'd like to be noticed for what he did. And when I in the process of, you know, I spent a lot of time working on a book with him, which has not been finished. And now it's going to be my job to finish it up, I think. Without him. But as I'm going through all the statistics on this, I say to him, you know, Tony, I was looking at the stats, and your 30-38 batting average is the highest batting average of any retired player since Ted Williams retired at 344 in 1960. And he goes, I know that. Yeah, I know that. Yeah. You're not telling me nothing I don't know.
Yeah, he knew his stuff.
Yeah, he knew his stuff. And as it turns out, I think they went back even further. It's the highest lifetime batting average of anybody besides Williams to retire since 1939.
Wow.
I mean, you're going back to the dead ball era when guys were still hitting 400 and wearing wool uniforms.
Yeah.
And I really don't believe, you know, I'll throw it open to you. I don't think anybody's going to ever hit 338 in our lifetime again.
Not lifetime, but I think someone's going to hit 400. I will tell you that.
Within a season, I don't know that anybody's going to have that kind of career of consistency. I mean, the guy batted 300 every year in his career.
Yeah.
Even on one leg his last season, he was had 33 hits, could barely move to the box. His last hit was a double. He kind of like gingerly got around the bases, and they had to pinch run for him.
Well, Barry Bloom with us. The week before, you were in New York, and last week you got to see Derek Jeter, who's actually starting to have a nice season, but this is a goodwill, good-feeling tour for him as it winds up for him, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, as funny, because I wrote, this is another column I wrote this week about, you know, every time everybody starts to count out Jeter, he makes a miraculous recovery. And when I was there on Thursday, he had his sixth multi-hit game in like nine, and was batting .405 over that span, and it raised his average something like 20 points, and he looks great running. In the piece, I compared it to the way Gwynn went out, which was, as we said, on one leg.
Yeah.
But Derek's going out the way we're all going to remember him, and if he stays healthy for the rest of the year, which I have no reason to believe he won't, he's a great impact on the Yankees, and if the Yankees make the playoffs, it's going to be because of him.
Wow. Hey, you're here to cover the Giants today for MLB.com. What's your take? I know you haven't seen a lot of them recently. What's your take on this West race and the Giants?
I just think, what did they win, 31 out of 41 at some point?
That's correct.
Right. I think that it's a long baseball season, and it has a tendency to balance itself out. Nobody keeps playing like that all year unless, like, you know, even the 1998 Yankees, which ultimately, I think, finished through the playoffs 125-50, you know, they started out like 1-4 or 1-5. I mean, the best of teams have down times, and the worst of teams have a good streak. And the Giants are just in one of those things right now. I'm not sure why, you know, Romo blows a couple of games. Yeah, closers blow games at times. You know, they're not perfect. They're human beings. And so then you just recycle them, retread them, do what Bochy did yesterday, show faith in them. Where else is he going to go? I mean, is Casilla going to be his closer? No. So, I mean, is there anybody else out there? There's closers are a dying breed right now, and they're dropping like flies around Major League Baseball. So it's like I just think that they're going through a spot where few of the guys are injured. Really, you haven't had the years out of Kane and Lincecum that you were hoping, and yet they're still 14 games over 500. So what's the complaint at this point?
Yeah, well, it's just you lose 9 of 10, and you don't pitch.
But it happens.
I know. Oh, you don't have to tell me.
Right.
I would tell you that's baseball. Take a drink. That's right. Part of the Marty Lurie drinking.
And that's what Bochy's doing, too, isn't he? He's just basically saying, I'm not panicking on something like this. It happens.
The injuries are somewhat disturbing because Pagan is out, and it's a back, and he's not in, and they may have to DL him. And it doesn't sound like a comfortable seat. You'll walk into that this morning.
Well, he's also, I think, really a catalyst.
Tremendous.
And the fact that they are playing as well as they are offensively the first half of the season is because he's back after missing almost all year last year.
More back tightness today. Belt will be another 2 weeks. So injuries are part of it. And then when you don't pitch, all of a sudden it compounds it. But that's a story of the Giants.
Well, look at the San Diego the other night. Kenley Jackson blew a save. The Padres scored 3 runs in the bottom of the ninth to win that game. It was like their first comeback win of the season, and that team can't hit. So it shows you, on any given night, depending on what a guy has, he can be beat.
That's the beauty of baseball. Hey, have a good day. It's a pleasure to have you stop by, as always. I know you got to get down to the clubhouse.
Okay, thanks.
All right, that is Barry Bloom, MLB.com. More coming up right here on the Sports Leader.